podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. It's hard to believe that 12 months have elapsed since this happened.
This is the moment. It's Archer to Guptill. 2-1. Guptill's going to push for two. They've got to go. It's gone through. It's got to go to the keeper's end.
Go on, go on.
Yeah!
Yes! Go on!
Embarrassing all margins. Absolute ecstasy for England. Agony. Agony for New Zealand.
Yes!
That, of course, was me at the back of the media centre at Lord's in the videotape truck with all the producers and various other technicians celebrating England's amazing World Cup win. That was 14th of July 2019. Who could forget that? And now it's 13th of July 2020. And I'm with today a man who should be working at Lord's. Normally that's his domain, but he's had to relocate under lockdown to a different office. Richard Goatley, Chief Executive of Middlesex. Normally you'd be in situ at Lord's, behind the pavilion where the Middlesex office is, but we're sitting on the terrace of Teddington's Cricket Club, the new pavilion overlooking Bushy Park. There's about 12 deer in the distance. It's a bit like being at a safari park, actually, which must be a beautifully pacifying view, given the stresses of being a county chief executive.
Yeah, that's right, Simon. It's a really, really pleasant place to come. We've got a little remote office here at Teddington Cricket Club. The pavilion was put up. It was open last October. It's a fantastic place to come. And certainly with the COVID crisis, it's been a great bolt hole to come and actually do some work quietly with Lord's largely shut. So I'm very lucky that I've probably got the two best offices in cricket, one at Lord's and one here. And we're delighted with how it's working out.
What's the benefit, actually? I mean, I can see the downsides of not being at Lord's in terms of sort of access to things and all that. But what are the benefits of being somewhere like this?
It's largely time, Simon. I'm 10 minutes from home. I can drive here in about 10 minutes. And I get a lot longer working day here. There's also a lot less distraction. As you said, it's very peaceful here and it's really enjoyable being here. My finance director also can work here. He lives locally as well, so we can get a lot of time and peace to actually do some proper work. Lord's is a wonderful place, but it's a very, very live ecosystem, and you do find sitting there you can be a bit of a target for people dropping in for a quick chat or a cup of tea. So and we get a lot of peace here, and it certainly worked really well during this crisis because we're able to get a lot done because there is a lot of book work, a lot of numbers work going on at the moment for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I noticed a whiteboard on your office wall there with a lot of quite bewildering branches off and various sort of topics to deal with. I mean, can you give us a sense of the number of different things that you have to deal with on a, say, weekly basis?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously the shop window of the first team has almost been the least of our problems, really, of late, because they've not been playing and the players have been furloughed. But around that, obviously, we have an India business, which obviously due to the COVID crisis also hitting Mumbai quite badly. We've got to manage where our academy is currently suspended because the kids can't come. But that takes up a lot of time. We've obviously worked very hard on bringing recreational cricket back. And we're delighted that the league season will start here next week, which is great news. And fundamentally, the finances of the game obviously are in turmoil, which is not necessarily a drastically bad situation.
It's something we can manage. Actually.
Exactly. It's the one year we actually got a whole lot more money because of the new TV deal, and obviously we were expecting that problem to have gone away. But fundamentally, managing the business, reshaping it, and looking at what it looks like in the post-COVID world is a huge challenge at the moment. And we sit here in the middle of July, and we still don't know when we're going to have crowds. Are we going to have crowds this year? Are we going to have crowds next year? And obviously a large part of our revenues are built around membership and gate receipts, and we've got to make sure the business is fit for purpose going forward.
So there is a talk of obviously that the season restarting shortly. How hard has that been to try and engineer?
I think if you ask my staff, they'll say very hard. The guys on the ground have worked unbelievably hard. Obviously, we've had quite a few people furloughed, so my senior management team has put in a vast amount of work with Gus and Lorraine, Laura, James, the other guys, who have worked incredibly hard to just make sure that when we go back to cricket, we're doing it in a safe way. And that's the key, safe for our players, for our staff, and for any supporters who are actually in the ground. So that's been a large key. The other part as well is we are a members' club, so we've got to keep engaging with our members. Normally, you know, a lot of people rely on us in the summer for their entertainment, for their engagement. And we've had to keep that going. You've been part of some of the dressing room conversations we've had. Steve Fletcher in our office has spent a lot of time just trying to get more and more content, just to make us keep members feel engaged, keep knowing that we're still here. We can't just shut down. We're a live club.
And I suppose, you know, they've all paid their subscriptions and they're not getting anything for it at the moment apart from this content. But when cricket does start again, there is the plan to stream games to members. So how will that work?
I think we're going to go for a better solution than we've had previously, and that will then last into the future, really, where we're able to have more cameras now, so it won't just be the static camera solution. Hopefully we can get a production in terms of the play that gets more used to what the spectators are, you know, have experienced in the past. One of the trouble with Sky and Sunset and Vine, all these guys, is their production quality now is so high that just sticking one static camera it doesn't really meet
the
requirements.
Looks like the 1970s, doesn't it?
It does. It's something that we can use going forward where people want to stay in contact with the cricket. It's the equivalent now of what I used to do. As I remember in the early 80s watching teletext change.
Yes.
While people were bowling, the opposition runs went higher. Actually, went quite quickly when you were bowling.
You switched it off again quickly.
But it was, you know, you had that sort of engagement as a kid, where you know, basically people want to see how their team's doing. Even if they can't see it live, you know, there's great interest in county cricket, and that's what we're trying to fulfil, really.
Obviously, the difficulty has been, one of the difficulties has been trying to get a consensus amongst the counties for what type of cricket to play. So give us a sense of what that sort of debate has been like.
Yeah, I suppose it's pretty easy to frame that, Simon, because we're 18 very different businesses. You've got these huge venues, some of which have hotels and you know, the magnificent facilities at the Rose Bowl that we've seen in the last week on the Test match and Emirates Old Trafford and Headingley in the Oval, etc. And they're very different businesses to the smaller cricket clubs. You know, your what we call the Cat C, effectively the non-host venues for the 100 tournament. And those businesses are far more reliant on different sorts of income. And in terms of their supporter base, some of those are very white ball focused, very 2020 focused. If you look at some of the counties, the Cat C's have done marvellously well in the Blast. You've seen counties like Northants win it a couple of times, I think, and we won it in 08, and Essex won it last year. Worcestershire have done very well. So you can understand that in terms of fulfilling their needs of their businesses and their spectators, they might be different to the more traditional counties. We, of course, are in a group of one, really, where we don't own our own ground, but we have the responsibilities of playing at Lords, very traditional county. A county in winning the county championship is hugely important. And perhaps we're going more in that direction. But it's been pretty civil, and I think everyone's understanding of each other's issues. It's just getting to the right answer, and I think we've got there.
So what is the right answer?
I think the right answer is some white ball cricket through mostly August. It looks like we're going to have a five match tournament with a final at the end of it, a 5-day final, which will be wonderful. And the Blast, drives a lot of the interest in the game. It drives a lot of the revenues. And keeping that alive, it's been a fantastic tournament the last few years, the Blast. It's been so engaging of the public that it's very, very important to keep that running. So it means the 50 over competition goes by the bye. I think that in reality, certainly with the 100 running alongside the 50 over competition in the original calendar, it was a mildly less important competition for that reason anyway. So I think that by having a blend of the championship for our members and for our traditionalists and the Blast, I think that's the right mix.
So it's going to be mostly Red Bull cricket in August, and then the Blast takes over, but there'll be Red Bull at the same time?
There'll be, August will be most, we'll start on 1st of August, and the August programme will be mostly Red Bull. There'll be a small interlude for some Red Bull cricket in September when the Blast's going on, but fundamentally it will culminate in a Blast final towards the end of September, and a one-off, what I would think of as being a Sheffield Shield type solution, one-off final for the Red Bull cricket at the beginning of October.
You mentioned the members there and the fact that they, you know, they wanted to stay engaged in the game, and obviously had to, you've tried to come up with schemes to keep them interested. What about the players, who most of whom have been furloughed? How hard has it been to maintain their interest and maintain their mental health as well?
Yeah, it's been really, really important, and there's been an awful lot of engagement with the players because this is a really awkward situation for them to be in. Even when they're injured, at least players could go out, do other things, and basically, you know, train. Being locked up effectively inside just with their partners, in some cases obviously young players don't have partners and families, it's been really tough. So we've worked really hard with our medical team to make sure the players engaged. I've certainly had far more player engagement of late, just checking in on everyone and also keeping them involved. I mean, one of the casualties of the COVID crisis has been pay. You know, the whole club is on a pay cut at the moment. And I think that when an organisation's not paying you the money that you're contracted to be paid, you've got a right to a lot of information about why that is and what's actually happening with the club. Fortunately, we've had really no issues at all with the staff, who have been kept involved with the state of the finances and have been really, really supportive of just getting the club in the right position to go forward.
So give me an example of a player, and obviously you don't have to name them, who maybe has had some difficulties, and what those difficulties might have been.
I think that there's little things to adjust to. I mean, I've had the same where, you know, you have players with young children who normally in, and you'd have experienced this in March, April, you say goodbye, kids, goodbye, darling. And you come back in October. And now through that period, people had a very, very different lifestyle where suddenly, you know, they've got homeschooling, all this sort of stuff. And it's stuff that's just fundamentally very different to what they do. And the one thing we all know about cricketers is they're the most fantastically competitive people in the world. When you take away that spirit of competition from them, they're a little bit sort of distraught, really. That massive outlet for all their skill, talent, and determination just isn't there. So I think there's probably been a few Monopoly boards been thrown across rooms and sort of things where just
rather
there isn't
than,
that outlet.
Rather than bats when you get dismissed or get a bad LBW decision or something. I mean, that's a very good point. And actually, it's funny, but I also think that I remember, you know, when I first got married and I was playing at the same time, it was a bizarre experience for the wife because I was never there in the summer and always there in the winter. Mm. So they have to sort of work out a way of dealing with that, and also dealing with these sort of ranges of emotion. You know, you come back one day having had a great day and you're feeling all sort of vibrant and you want to go out for dinner and celebrate and all that. And the wife might have had a tough day and for whatever reason. And then another day you come back and you've got naught or you've got naught for 100 and you're feeling totally morose and monosyllabic. And they have to deal with that. So it must have been now that they've got the players there all the time, it must be quite hard for the wives as well.
Yeah, I think it's hugely tough for them and everyone else as well. I mean, you know, I've found that, you know, your sort of general mood goes in swings and roundabouts over the last few months, where you have good weeks and bad weeks, where sometimes it's actually quite nice, the weather's good and you can sit in the garden with your laptop and you can really sort of reacquaint yourself with your family. But other times, you're sort of just desperate just to get out there and see people and engage. And these are young men as well. They're not, you know, they're not used to being sort of caged in this way. And I think it's been really tough for them. But our guys have done really, really well. And I expect us to hit the ground running pretty hard.
Well, that'll be very encouraging. And clearly, Middlesex, I mean, we did this Zoom call, didn't we, with the 1980s Middlesex team, where there were four championship wins in that period. There was a lot of cup wins as well. Middlesex haven't had the success that probably the members have got used to or hoped for. I mean, what can you do about that? One of the things I've always felt, actually, to sort of slightly answer the question, is the Asian community in London, who are massive and are cricket converts, I've felt there's always been a bit of a disconnect, for whatever reason, and there may be blame on both sides here, between that community and the club. Is there something going on there? And you mentioned, by the way, you mentioned the Sachin Tendulkar Academy, which we have the nets for at the back here. So is that part of the plan, in a way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first thing we did in 2015, when I took over, was in writing the club strategy for my tenure, we had three main pillars for our strategy, and one of them was diversity, to actually improve the club's relationship with those other communities. Because when we looked at it, as you said, in the 80s and 90s, when the club, I think it might have won 14 trophies in 14 years, something like that. And that was built around, black and Asian players. I mean, it was a fantastic success for the club. And we are clearly our strongest when we truly represent our community. So one of the reasons for engaging with Sachin was to build the club around a far more sympathetic tone towards the Asian community. We've done a lot more work with the specific Asian leagues. There's quite a few around Middlesex that are sort of almost standalone. There's not been enough engagement with them. We've worked hard to bring those back into the fold. We've done some rationalisation of the leagues. It's going to take time, but when I look now at our academies and our youth squads, I see really, really talented kids from those communities that will be the players of the next decade. As I say, it's frustrating because you want it now, but there aren't quick fixes in this area. We're hugely engaged in doing this. Our board is, it's almost the most important thing we're doing right now. And I've got a board meeting tomorrow where it's actually top of the agenda. It's how we actually continue to get this right. So it's very important, and it is the measure of success. But like everything, you said, how do we build a winning team? You build a winning team slowly. When Gus Fraser took over, I think in 2009, he brought in a lot of changes. And it took really until 2016, where we won the championship, for that to reach a sort of crescendo. It's gone down now, and we're not playing as well as we'd like. But largely that's because we're building again. When I look at our batting lineup for next year, we've got Gubbins, Holden, Lace. These guys are going to be great. They're young players that are going to be really fantastic. Helm, all these other guys. We've got real talent in that squad. Just needs a bit of time to come through. We had that last time. I suspect to have sustained success in sport, money makes a big difference. And while we're not poor, we're not rich. We're very much in the middle of our resources. We don't have the funds that Surrey do. So it just takes a little bit longer to make those changes.
Well, what are the finances like, actually? I mean, I've seen the balance sheet for a few years, and it tends to be, let's say, roughly $6 million out and about $6 million back in. Mm. So is it that precarious?
Yes, it is to a degree. The fundamental really is that your biggest cost is people for Middlesex. I mean, we're a bit different to other counties because I've got no debt, but I don't really have any assets either.
We don't have the ground, basically.
Yeah, we don't have our own facility. We've got a house in Edgware, and a lease at Radlett, and very little else. So
what's the house in Edgware?
I put about five or six players, and the younger players, in there. When they come to London, it's obviously very expensive. It's a nice place you can put. In theory, it's a place where they, where we can keep an eye on them. I'm never quite sure that works as well as it should. But it's a good environment to be able to say to a kid, look, and to a parent, come to London, you've got a bed, you've got a room, and we do the right things there. But with the money, our major cost is people, and they're the one thing you don't want to cut. You never ever want to cut your team because you can't afford them, and we've never done that in my time here. We've got a slightly younger squad now, which brings the salary bill slightly under control. But certainly from 16, where you have a championship winning team and a lot of players reaching 30, you end up with their salaries being quite toppy. And I'd love to see the figures of Middlesex in 1988 or something, because with Embers, Gat, all these crew playing, the salary bill now would be just completely unsustainable in the salary cap for anyone. So it works in a way that it kind of balances out success. And when you look at how American sports work, And they work very like that, where you it's very hard to sustain success for too long because then the finances start to work against you. So
what, players wanting more money, basically?
Yeah, basically. And you've got a salary cap, you've got limited resources, and you know suddenly you can't end up with six, seven, eight players on six-figure salaries. There just isn't the money to do it. So there will be some wastage somewhere in the line. Now, you hope those players will go and play for England because that changes the dynamic again. So, you know, if you look at your Owen Morgans, etc., you know, over the years, comparatively, we've paid him very little money ourselves because England have been paying him on a central contract. And that's the beautiful scenario.
But then, of course, you don't see that player that you've nurtured. So, in a way, it's sort of counterproductive slightly, isn't it?
Again, the whole thing is almost self-balancing. And that is one of the beauties of county cricket. I was listening this morning to some of the analysis of the football last night, and you know, the solution I think I hear for Manchester United is to spend 250 million quid this summer. Well, is that sport? It's not in my eyes, it's not.
Sachin Tendulkar, the Tendulkar Academy, which, as I mentioned, is sort of semi behind us here. What is that exactly?
So what we did about 3 or 4 years ago, we helped Sachin get his son Arjun some cricket in Middlesex, and I had dinner with him, and we started talking through just our objectives, and I had two major ones I wanted to talk to him about. One was engagement with the Asian community and actually a more diverse Middlesex side, but also I've always been pretty impressed with Sachin's approach to the game. Incredibly hardworking, humble, and I think played the game in the right way, and we'd done some work on values at Middlesex, which Gus was one of the first things Gus brought in. You know, he wanted us to play cricket in the right way. Out of that conversation, we decided that we should work together and to create these academies. We did some Tendulkar Middlesex camps at Merchant Taylors. We've done some in Mumbai and Pune and some other places in India. And we opened in January our first permanent academy at a place called D.Y. Patil in Navi Mumbai.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I mean, you'll have been there yourself. Yeah. A marvellous stadium. Held the IPL
final.
That was a really wonderful place to start our first academy. So effectively, you've got a massive sports complex, big sports stadium, swimming pools, etc., and a cricket academy based there, alongside a sports club where people can use those facilities. So we've got a couple of hundred kids there signed up already, and it was working beautifully until COVID pulled that out. That's a very long-term project, and we're now just looking at other sites in the UK and the rest of the world to site more academies.
And what's the idea is to try and nurture players from that area, wherever this academy is, and hopefully filter them to Middlesex.
The last bit is important, you know, to try and get some players for us, but it's not really the driver. The driver for us is just to have an influence on kids' lives. Our model is about, this isn't about rich, wealthy kids paying a lot of money for an academy. It's about finding as many talented kids as possible and giving them an opportunity and teaching them in a way that both Middlesex and Sachin approve of. So we took our academy syllabus, and Josh Knappett, our head coach, amended that with Sachin to bring in a sort of Sachinised approach to how Middlesex play cricket. So the kids who are being taught in our academies are being taught in the same way as you would have been, Gat had been, and our current academy guys are. So we're trying to give those opportunities, and we give 10% of our places free to talented kids who can't afford it. And we're looking to up our numbers on women's and girls a lot as well, because that's another market that's very important to us and to Sachin. So there's a real meeting of minds there. But fundamentally, when I looked at us having another business, I looked at all the other counties. They've all got pop concerts or hotels or all this stuff going on. The only thing we do well is cricket. So I thought any new business we have has got to be in cricket, and it's got to be in cricket coaching. You know, I sat with the ECB and they said, well, what is Middlesex's role in the game? And I slightly glibly said, well, Mike Gatting, Mike Brearley, you know, Andrew Strauss, Owen Morgan.
Yeah,
that's what we do. We produce great cricketers who have impacted for England. And we want to keep doing that as widely as possible around the globe. And I think we can't have a better partner than Sachin. I mean, he's an amazing, amazing individual, hugely compelling and passionate about what he does. And I'm very lucky to have him... you know, doing this with us,
because sort of as an ally, really.
Well, as a business, he owns half the business. I mean, you know, we own the other half, and he, I think, in his second career, I don't think that he has as much fun working with corporates and doing the sponsorship and all that sort of stuff as he does just teaching kids how to play cricket. So we get the best bit of him. We get the bit he likes. We get a lot of his time. I mean, a lot of sponsors and stuff have said to me, well, is Sachin really involved? Yeah, he's here. He's been at camps at Merchant Taylors. You know, he's always he's very life. He's very involved. You know, he's in our weekly meetings, our monthly meetings. You know, he's very involved. And it's been a really beautiful partnership, actually. It's gone very well.
Just going back to the playing side, I suppose one thing that's thrown the club out in a little bit is that you had Peter Hanscom as captain, who was going to come over from Australia. Well, now, presumably, he's not coming. So has that created an issue, and who will be the captain?
It's a good question, and I'm going to refer you to Gus on that one and Stuart. Okay. They haven't announced that yet, so I'll leave that with them. But yeah, Peter was going to come, and then we talked about him coming for a short period, August, September. I was quite keen on having him to acclimatise with all the players, and you know, I thought in many ways that was a bit of a sort of free go for him to sort of get a bit of experience with the club. But just the COVID, it's not ready for that yet, in my view, for him to come for such a short period with, you know, with the regulations as they are. So Peter will come next year, and we're very excited about that. You know, that's everyone who's engaged with him comes says he comes across incredibly well. I watched a bit of the Netflix documentary, and he came across very well in that. I think we need that leadership. I think it's good if it comes from outside the club. It was very, very prominent when Chris Rogers was captain. He did very well for us. Adam Voges was another magnificent captain, even though for a short period. I think players need someone to look up to, and there's nothing like a sort of tough Aussie to, you know, to get your team moving. Middlesex likes an Aussie.
You're still here at Teddington. When do you expect to get back to Lords, both working and playing?
Well, obviously, we're going to be playing from 1st of August in county cricket. We need to determine what the matches that we play at Lords will be, and that remains undecided. We don't have a schedule yet as we sit here now. So
we're likely to be playing at Radlett, is that right?
Radlett's an option, and we'll see what happens with Lords. We don't know yet the schedule. We don't know yet whether crowds are allowed. So there's sort of hourly conversations here going on about how we make that best fit. I think crowds are. I'm quite optimistic that we might get some crowds in. I don't have any sort of special knowledge there, but I think that the direction of travel is all that we're going in that direction where more and more people are able to do more and more things. I'd like to think that cricket could be quite a nice testbed for other sports, maybe. Who knows, you know, that perhaps like football, you know, if they're going to end up with big crowds back in football, maybe you could trial it with some crowds in cricket first. And I think that'll be key. But you know yourself, Simon, this is moving on almost a daily basis at the moment as to what we can and can't do. And what worries me about that is obviously we'd only need one large problem, which could be nothing to do with cricket, just a national scale, and the landscape will change massively again.
So in the meantime, with potentially no crowds, have you had any initiatives like these football clubs where they either put up a screen of fans or cardboard cutouts of fans, which you can buy, apparently?
I'm not sure you...
You haven't got to that stage yet, perhaps.
I'm not sure you need to recreate the atmosphere at some county four-day games.
Ooh, well, don't say that. That's a dangerous comment. Somerset will have you hung, drawn and quartered. And Essex.
I think that sort of stuff is unlikely, but I do think that cricket has a clear position here in the community. And we've seen that mostly, you know, because it's not been here for the community, they really miss it. So we've got to produce cricket in the right way, and I think we've seen how important it is to everybody. So, you know, going forward, I'd like to think we're going to learn some lessons here for next year when we get back to normal, whatever normal looks like going forward, because we can push cricket in a different direction to where it's been. Make it a massively community-focused sport. We need to represent our community. We need to have people feeling that at 9 years old, if they're talented, they can go up and be the next Mike Gatting if they come from Southall or they come from Isleworth or, you know, wherever in the county they come from, that they can come through the system. And they're not going to be be blocked by, you know, the money coming in and actually stopping that happening. And I think that's our real opportunity. And it links in very well with what you said earlier about diversity and about the Asian and black communities, because they're a massive part of that. And they're the guys we want. They're the guys we want to believe they can be part of this club. And, you know, cricket's different now. Middlesex is different now. Lords is different now. We've gone past that sort of elite and isolationist sort of perspective. You know, we're really embracing now. And that's the key to me to the future of this club. We will be a huge community club going forward. And I think that's where county cricket needs to position itself.
I mean, that's a good point. And I suppose, having had a daughter heavily involved in the Middlesex setup, in women and girls and so on, I think one of the things that, I mean, we were able to afford the £250 worth of kit that you had to buy every year, to the training kit and the playing kit and so on. But I know from talking to people like Dean Headley working in youth cricket that that's one barrier to entry. And that when we were young, we weren't expected to buy, you know, all the kind of replica kit and stuff. So is that the kind of thing that you have to look at to make sure everyone feels engaged?
Yeah, I think there's two things. Money is an issue, and dropping those barriers to entry. And obviously we've got the All Stars Cricket now, which is not a very expensive program where people get a bat, they get a bag, they get the stuff. And we've done an awful lot of bursaries giving free kit to kids during that period. But the biggest thing for me is about the inclusiveness and welcoming. People will find a way. If they have the desire, the motivation to be cricketers, and if we've got the right intent where we're being embracing, we're trying to get everyone feeling part of the club, then that's the biggest barrier. You know, do kids, you know, who aren't even playing cricket in a lot of state schools, where my son goes, they don't play cricket in the state school. And, do they believe they can be professional cricketers? We've got to make that happen. We've got to create that belief. And I think we've got advantages because of the lack of money. We look much closer to the community. You know, do people believe they're going to be Premiership footballers? Wow, it looks difficult now. You know, it looks so separate, gated communities they live in, you know. Or even the fact they've got football back so early, it sort of shows how much the money talks. We can stay closer than that. And that's not a criticism or a competition to football. We're just saying we're just going to live alongside you in a different way.
Obviously, you know, you've got a pleasant environment here working. What are you going to miss about lockdown?
The best thing about lockdown for me has been the engagement with people, and particularly our board, actually, and the other chief execs, because we've all had time and there's been a lot of meetings, discussions and a lot of data. I think you're finding now that more people in cricket know more about their businesses than ever before, because we're not rushing around making sure that the toilets are, you know, are functional and you know that some a member's been taken sick or something. All those sorts of issues, they've gone. So I think you'll find now that everyone's really on top of their game. I think we've seen that with the ECB as well. They're right on top of all the game's issues. And that breather has been quite valuable.
Would be an entirely fitting end to the sort of September time for Middlesex to be playing in the Bob Willis Trophy final at Lords, wouldn't it?
I hope so. I mean, I think that we brought Stuart Law in, what, about 18 months ago now. And he's going to be fantastic for us. He's had a year to look at the squad. And now we've got this funny little season. And, you know, you look at the football, look at this short season. A lot of teams have coped with it better than others. And I'm pretty confident that we'll cope with it pretty well, that Stuart and Gus have done the right things. And, I'd love to think that we could get into a final. I've said to the players, we've got two trophies to win here. They're big, important trophies to win. And let's go and do it.
Well, that's good, positive words from the Middlesex Chief Executive, Richard Goatley. Let's hope that the weather stays as it has been this week and hopefully next week and for the rest of the time when county season begins again, which is the 1st of August. We're all looking forward to that. I'm just looking across Bushy Park now at all the kids joining the summer cricket camps, which, thank God, have been allowed to happen. We'll be reviewing the first day's play from the Old Trafford Test match on Thursday night. In the meantime, hope you get out and play some cricket or watch some cricket somewhere. And thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.